Hi, everybody. My name is Arrow. I'm a gratefully recovering adult child in New York City. Thank you so much, Margaret, for inviting me. This is really great to be here. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak to people. I'm just going to take a moment and just sort of a quick moment of silence just to just sort of ground myself here. I'm not used to going to meetings so late at night, so which is great. I need more variety in my life, so I'm grateful to be here. When I look back at my, for some reason, when I look back at my childhood, this is the one thing that always sort of comes up for me is this idea of like my brother, and I guess my brother, my sister, and I are outside of the house we grew up in, and it's like basically pretty much burned to the ground. And my brother's there, my sister's there somewhere, and it's just sort of, it felt like, since we knew where we came from, we sort of grew up in a haunted house, that we thought that if we knew where we came from and we didn't have children, our lives were going to be perfect, because we knew where we came from was not normal. And if we didn't have children, we wouldn't pass this thing on to anyone, right? So that was kind of, which didn't really work, actually. It doesn't just magically go away, unfortunately. And just to give my quick family history, my father's side is primarily, they're from Ireland originally. There's a lot of incest and sex abuse that sort of come down the line. There's been a lot of congenital issues with family members and things. So basically, my two great grandfathers were the very classic sort of child and wife beating alcoholics. So that was my father's two, So my two great grandfathers, and then on my mother's side, one was an alcoholic, a child beating alcoholic, and then the other one was a philanderer and possibly an alcoholic too. So those were sort of the family members that had the issues where seemingly a lot of it, kind of spilled over to us basically. And my parents were just not equipped to have children. I saw a very great Janet Woyditz, who co-wrote some of this literature for ACA, has a great, there's a video you can find of hers online, and she talks about how, a lot of ACA issues can be traced back to a lack of skills that weren't learned at home, practical behaviors and things like that. And that was my parents. They had no tools. They had no ability to really express themselves. They had no ability to really look inside of themselves. Everything was sort of based on appearances and outside. No one had an interior life in the family I grew up in. There was also a lot of tension and drama. Lots of para-alcoholism. Looking back, I realized that, there were no relaxed nervous systems at home. Every moment was fraught with tension, and that was sort of the, that's basically how my brother, my sister, and I grew up in that environment, And I know since, the work I've done in ACA that, that's what they got from their parents as well, And I came into basically what brought me into 12-step program was that, I did not have any satisfactory relationships in my life, really. I moved to New York to do stand-up comedy, which I basically, I look back at that to do comedy, would have been a bigger I was used to sort of living off of crumbs, keeping my vision small, and it would have been nice to have been, oh, I'm going to come to New York and make money and be successful doing comedy. But I didn't know I could ask for that, kind of the environment that I came out of, And basically my parents, if they could have raised little robot children, like you wind them up and they go and they do their homework, and they do all the things little robot children are supposed to do, but that's not, children aren't robots, and my parents just couldn't handle any sort of variation of they just were not equipped. They were not equipped to be parents. So, and everything was expected to be done perfectly, even though we were never shown how to do anything, So I was never shown how to write a book report or anything at home. And, it was my fault I wasn't doing well in school, So I played a lot of different roles as a child. This is mentioned a lot in ACA, the family dynamic, the family roles. And, when I was very little, I was a second born, and, I was more photogenic than my brother. So I was like the mascot at first, for both of my parents. And then, as I got a little bit older, I became my father's scapegoat. And then I was my mother's hero. I got enmeshed with my mother. I was my mother's hero. I was also the lost child at the same time. It was like all of these different little hats that I was wearing all the time, in the house that I grew up in, and no one at home was allowed to really be who they, who they potentially were, because it just, that environment was just, did not exist, and what passed for love for me was a lot of sarcasm and mean-spiritedness, which I got from my father. And then my mother was just basically, I learned a lot of putting up with a lot of neglect from my mother, because I was told that I was loved, and then, the actions or inactions proved otherwise, And I think one of the hardest things for me to really have an understanding of, like a felt heart sense, is been the neglect, because it's one thing to have, my father was very, very explosive physically, you just never knew what you're gonna get. And, there were times where he, physically assaulted me, but, those are moments that happen. But the other, the emptiness of the neglect, has just been, it's taken me a long time to really kind of wrap my heart around it and be able to grieve it, and I have managed to definitely to do that, what really helped me in the beginning of this was really just, writing out the family, the family tree, in step one. And, I've been going to a couple other different programs, and I like how, they do, different programs do the tree a little bit differently, and, it's one thing to know, my fam, like I can, rattling off my family's history is one thing, but to see it on paper, and see where people, I was joking with a friend. I was like, God, do we just go? I mean, is it just like cavemen and alcoholics or something? We just keep, is it the first, the missing link alcoholic or something? But, just to see this stuff on paper, because I thought that I was the, all of my issues that brought me into, into ACA, sort of my underliving. I'm one of those people that trudge through life, as they mentioned in the Red Book. So there's a lot to, there's a lot to recover from, and it's a process that takes time. And, I I'm in a, I'm in a much better place than I've, than I've been. It's just, it's really helpful to see myself in print, because again, I really thought I was the only one going through any of these things. I had no idea. I felt terminally unique. And it's always helpful for me to just see it, to see it down on paper, because I go through, what it says, we're going to go through, with this process through the steps. It's a pain, these are potentially painful processes, but they're of course helpful, and I made a lot of mistakes when I first came into ACA. I chased a lot of unavailable people for a while, because that's what I was kind of used to. And sort of cultivating friendships too, has been difficult at times, but it's also very rewarding, in ACA, cultivating reciprocal relationships, because that's not what I had. All of my relationships were, a variation of, childhood, basically. So I had a lot of people in my life that, basically had a lot of contempt towards me, which is basically my father. That was my father. My father had a lot of contempt, towards me. And what happened at home was he basically went after my self-esteem. I sort of look at him as my, my parents are sort of the 1-2 punch, where, my father would, go after me and project his own, his self-hatred onto me, and then my mother did nothing to stop it. And then she would just sort of, be there to kind of pick up the pieces to sort of refashion me into someone that was going to take care of her, and her needs, because again, my parents had no ability to give themselves any, any sort of support or love to each other, let alone one, let alone as a married couple. They couldn't even provide this for themselves, and there's been a, it's been a long, it's been a long grieving process. I thought for the first two and a half, oh, yeah, about first 2.5 years, I had the pink cloud where I cried quite a bit when I first came into ACA, but then, after that, it took probably a good 2, 2.5 years to kind of get some of the grief moving, and it's all, it's all okay. It's just, it's part of this healing process, and I did a lot of traveling last year, which felt like, a year of grief. I swear, it felt like I cried every night last year, but, it was so necessary, and what's been happening is, it's gone from the childhood stuff where I could just sort of recount it. I mean, to a certain extent, I still can kind of recount it in a flat sort of way, but the color of it is very much, seeped in a lot more than, than it had in the past. I felt like I was a robot program with just a few memories, kind of coming into like Blade Runner or something, But now that I've been in the program and I've connected more, with my inner parts, that is changing the sort of the, the color, the emotion, the feeling of things is starting to really kind of, come in now, which is very interesting, Can, a lot of it can be very subtle, some of these feelings. And I'm in my body a lot more than I have been in the past. I have a lot of tendency to dissociate, but I've been able to really be sort of more present in my body, because I used to really just live in my head. That's how I got through life, was just to shut everything else down, because everything, nothing made, growing up, nothing made sense, for my parents. It was like the laws of physics could change at any moment at home. What was true 10 seconds ago may not be now. That was kind of the, that was sort of the environment that, that I came out of. And, you know, again, I have to remind myself that, you know, again, you know, this is where I picked up the anxiety because it was at home. You know, that's what my, you know, that's what my parents were sort of always broadcasting was, you know, their own anxiety, you know. And what's helped too is to realize over a period of time, you know, looking at some of these other, you know, the family tree is that, you know, I can list both of my parents as, you know, perpetrators, but also victims of abuse too. You know, like I'm starting to see the patterns and, you know, my feelings towards my parents is, you know, has softened over a period of time, you know, and I'm really able to, you know, just sort of, it's through all of the, you know, reading the Red Book, you know, over and over again, you know, it really starts to sink in, you know, that this really was, you know, this is a disease. It is a sickness. You can look at it in a lot of different ways, you know. There's sort of the disease model of alcoholism, there's spiritual, you know, there's different ways of, you know, looking at this, you know, this problem. And, you know, the solution is, you know, is for me to love myself, you know, to be my own loving parent. And, you know, that's where the trial and error comes in because, you know, I mean, I know what parenting wasn't, you know, which is what my parents did, you know, but, you know, I'm really, through all the work that I've done, you know, I feel like I've been able to connect more with my inner child, you know, my inner parts, and to really, you know, I've been able to give them much more love and support. For a very long time, I feel like I've just been like a robot practicing, like, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you, you know, but it's just the repetition of that, you know. And there definitely has been, you know, a softening in myself, you know, because I really felt justified in acting out. You know, I had unrewarding relationships with people, so I would act out and people would act out on me. You know, I felt like I could take, you know, I felt the world owed me because of what I went through. And you know that, and I hate to, as much as I hate to admit it, that was my father. My father did the same thing. He felt like everyone owed him. And, but of course, for me, my circumstances were different, you know. And I went through life with, you know, sort of like my middle finger always sort of raised, you know. And I did that for a number of years. You know, I had a lot of transactional relationships with people. You know, I didn't know how to be a good friend. I didn't know how to listen to people. You know, I manipulated to get what I wanted. You know, I wanted to be safe, so I was always the life of the party and told jokes and stuff. But, you know, I had no sense of who I was inside at all. You know, I could be making people laugh, and I could be doing all these different things that should have meant something, but they didn't, you know, because they were outside of myself, you know. And it was moving to New York City that I had the sort of the band-aid ripped off of my community, you know, coming here and not really knowing people, you know. And what ended up happening was my relationships just became so much more violent. You know, some of my dating situations were getting, you know, there were drugs involved, there was violence. You know, I had no sense of who I was. You know, I was expecting people to fix me, you know. And I put out this I'm broken, you know, I'm broken, please fix me vibe, you know, because I didn't have parents to, you know, I didn't have a father to show me things or a mother, you know. So my response to, you know, these relationships were my black and white thinking. It was like, well, you know, obviously what I'm putting out there is not helping. You know, I'm not getting good things back, you know, from what I'm putting out there. And so if I basically stop, you know, if I don't put myself in any sort of, for 2 years, 2.5 years, I went to work. I went to the gym. I grocery shopped, but I didn't really go out and do anything. I really kept to myself because I didn't trust. I mean, it's such a terrible place to be, is to not trust yourself, and that was, I couldn't trust myself. And that was led to two and a half painful years of isolating. And then, I lucked out and I found I found a therapist about 2 years. I've been an ACA for almost 8 years. So, before finding ACA, I found a good enough therapist. And I remember, he asked me, why are you coming in? And, it's I told him, I said, I feel feral. Like I came in just feeling like I had been raised by wolves, and didn't have any, didn't have, hindsight benefit of almost 8 years of ACA now. I can look back now and it all makes sense now. But back then, I really did. I felt like a wild animal with just, matted fur and everything, and the therapist helped, and ACA was, definitely the next thing, that I needed. And, I've been able to, yeah, I actually have been able to forgive my parents, which has been a very long, process to go through, and I thought forgiveness was somehow like magically like waving a wand or something, and it was just kind of everything was going to be, okay. And, I can forgive my parents, but, I don't, I forgive them because I understand that, they couldn't have ended up any other way that they did. But, I'm not gonna, I don't forget the acts of what happened, because there was a lot of, cruelty and unkindness there, But, I'm, the next person that I'm really working to forgive is myself, because, if I can see that my parents did everything because that was what their parents, that they didn't know any better, I can apply that to myself. And that's kind of sort of the next sort of phase in my recovery, is to really forgive myself for, the things that I did, the roles that I took on, according to my, as a teenager, I was, I in my 20s, I was spoiled, because I did the things that I wanted to do. I did things different from my, from my family, And yeah, it's letting go of those roles because they were really never mine to begin with, And it's also dealing with the emotions that come up. I was set up to be my mother's caregiver and caretaker, and, I helped her leave as a teenager. I helped her leave the house that, I grew up in, and I had no thought of myself, taking care of myself and my own needs, And it was all about, taking care of my mother, And, I'm really grateful because, I've obviously, with recovery, things change, and, I had to completely sever ties with my mother. I had done it a few years off and on, but the thing I've sort of realized is that my mother's, again, my mother is sort of the covert manipulator, and whereas my father's like the really abusive, the overtly abusive one, my mother's kind of the sly one, And that's been the, yeah, my mother's behavior's been the hardest thing for me to really sort of grasp, because, she has this veneer of being very sweet and caring, but she is incredibly manipulative, and she has said some very cruel things to me over the years, And I came to the realization that, I can't be in a dynamic, in a family dynamic where I, I'm treating people with respect and dignity, and I'm not being treated that way. My mother, there's a, my My mother is a closeted lesbian. You know, she's lived with her partner for 36 years now. And, you know, her partner is a replay. Basically, my mother keeps marrying her mother. I had an evil Portuguese grandmother, so, you know, my mother's the woman my mother is with is exactly, you know, treats me with contempt as well. So, you know, I had to sever my connection from the family because, you know, I tried to work it out with them and tried to have a conversation, and they weren't willing to do it. And for my own, you know, taking care of myself, you know, I had to sever the connection. And it's been actually really helpful. You know, it's been helpful, and to be around people that are supportive, because no one in my family is doing any kind of recovery whatsoever. You know, I have one cousin who is in therapy, and that's kind of it. You know, that's all that he's doing. You know, and you know, I have to just keep, you know, I'm doing this for myself, you know, my inner child, because of all of the things, you know, I've connected with my inner child in a very sort of interesting way with food. You know, I've been reading and working the Loving Parent Guidebook, and you know, I just felt like I needed a reboot in everything, and that included my nutrition. You know, so I've been able to connect with my inner child in a very sort of profound, simple way over food, you know, and this very gentle, beautiful communication that we've been having, you know, how there wasn't a lot of healthy choices growing up, you know, for food. He actually enjoys healthy food, which I'm surprised, but we didn't have healthy food growing up, and sometimes there wasn't food from time to time. And, you know, I ask him what he wants, you know, he started communicating. He loves bananas. So I've been getting him bananas and green apples, you know, and what he's communicated with to me is that, you know, growing up, no one ever asked him what he wanted. No one ever checked in with him to see how he was, or, you know, there was no boundaries didn't exist in the house I grew up in. You know, they just didn't. You know, nobody had boundaries. So, and of course, his were, you know, just sort of trampled over. So, and he's also communicated with me as well that, you know, he does, in fact, remember, you know, a lot of the abuse that happened. You know, that for me, it's like I feel like I don't have a lot of memories from childhood, but, you know, he remembers everything that happened, you know, and he's kept that away from us because it hasn't felt safe. You know, and then I look back, I just think of him, this, you know, this little version of myself, and just think, my God, you know, I owe him so much. You know, I owe him, you know, as much love as I can manage, you know, and you know, it's never going to be this whole reparenting thing. You know, I mean, it's trial and error, you know, and but it does work, you know. I think it definitely does, you know, it just takes time. And, you know, I have a sponsee now. I'm sponsoring someone in ACA. And, you know, up until very recently, I haven't been able to sort of take stock of all of the work that I've done in ACA. When I came in, you know, I But okay, so what actually kept me going in ACA was that if I could see someone, you know, New York City, right? I could pick one person on the street and say, you know, that person, whoever they are, you know, if they decided to better themselves and whatever that meant for them, they showed up and they did the work, they could be a better person. I knew in my head that I could do that, you know, because I'm a person too. Even though I didn't feel it in my heart, I was living in my head, and so my head was like, all right, you know, do the work, you'll change. And, you know, of course I didn't quite know what that meant at the time, but, you know, that was sort of the mental trick that kept me going. You know, it was like, just, you know, just keep going back. And, you know, The nice thing is too, I mean, I'm at a point now where I used to feel like I was carrying my recovery on my back every day, and I've been able to let go of a lot of that. What I've found for myself is just that my willingness to do, just to show up, just needs to be, a tiny grain, a little more willingness than unwillingness. It's not like I have to be. It's not like every day has to be an ACA pep rally, it really doesn't. And I'm grateful that I'm working with a sponsor now because he's new to ACA, and I just started SLAA recently, so I'm going through a new program, and I'm trying to be supportive of him. And the beautiful thing is that I come from a, my mother is such a manipulator, and she does kind things because she needs people's love and approval, and I'm so grateful. I mean, I've had that in the past, but that's not how I'm conducting myself these days. I'm very grateful that I have a sponsee, and as I've told him, I can't do the work for him. I can just show up. I can be there for him. And, if I can help somebody avoid the pitfalls that I went through, when I first came into the program, and everything I say to him, I have to say for myself too. Because, it's still, as much as a lot has happened in my life, I still want to change my job, and there's still a lot of uncertainty, and I think the nice thing is through, the process with ACA, I've definitely, my concept of a higher power has really changed dramatically too. I mean, my God was always sort of that Twilight Zone God, where you're just sort of like, something bad's gonna happen to you at the end. But that was my that was my parents. I saw them as the punishing, you're going to get it regardless. That was my sort of take on a higher power, but thankfully, that's evolved, and I've had to let go of some higher powers that, weren't higher power enough, and there is something that has kept me safe for, I'm 54. So, I haven't been an air conditioner or a safe hasn't fallen on my head. Something has been keeping me alive, and I'm safe, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm still, still things come, the disease of family dysfunction just runs very, very deep, and just to give an example, I've been in my apartment for, gosh, over 9 years now, and I came in and there was an issue with the heat wasn't working properly. And I tried to get it to work a couple of times, and then I just sort of gave up on it, and then just sort of got used to being in this apartment where the heat doesn't work. And I was home the other day, and I was sitting in here, and it reminded me of the, and I had never, the 9 years I've been here, and most of that in ACA. I realized that my studio apartment is exactly, the heat never worked in the room I grew up in, in the house I grew up in. The heat didn't work, and I realized I just sort of gave up, and this just on some level reminded, the heat doesn't work. And I called the super, and he's coming over to fix it. And I've discovered too that, I work in an office that's, I work at a nursing school, and it's primarily women, and I'm working, I'm in a support role, and it's all of these, women with PhDs. And I think on some level, I'm trying to get some sort of validation from them, which I'm not going to get. I'm not going to get it from this job. But it's just interesting, how these things kind of come up, even now, but I'm grateful. I'm just grateful to be able to, not be as fearful of the future as I, it's being able to, be for the future to be ex, to feel scared, but to feel excited, to feel like a lot of different, conflicting feelings, which is before I had never been able to do that before. I'm living in my body, which is, it's an interesting place to inhabit. I need to eat. I need to go to the bathroom. I'm on the same level as other people when I'm in my body, and I'm grateful for that because ACA has, really helped sort of, bring me back to me. And it's still a process, but I'm so grateful that to be going. And I feel like just the fact that, this feels like some kind of twisted campfire story, but I mean, the fact that I'm actually talking to people is such a miracle, from how I grew up, so. And I'm just grateful to be here and to, we're all in this together, all part of this recovery. So I'll end there. Thank you.